It's hard to believe, but 70 years on from a World War II battle in Papua New Guinea, there's a battlefield that has remained remarkably untouched. The dead, their weapons and their personal effects left as they were when the guns finally fell silent. Although PNG locals were apparently well aware of the site and its history, they avoided it out of respect for the dead. But 2 years ago, they decided to share their secret, choosing to tell a former Australian commando and army captain, Brian Freeman, who'd set up an adventure business organising treks along the Kokoda Trail. Indeed, he'd unwittingly often led treks within 500 metres of the site of the Battle of Eora Creek, which in 1942 had been crucial to the defeat of the Japanese in New Guinea. Brian Freeman tells the story of the battle site and its rediscovery in a new book, The Lost Battlefield of Kokoda. Brian, welcome to RN Breakfast.
Thank you.
Tell us about the location of this lost battlefield. Can you describe it for us?
Yeah, the location's incredibly interesting because it's certainly separated from the main Kokoda Trail. There's what I would call now and what our archaeological teams call the lower Japanese defensive posturing. This is during the Australian advance after the long withdrawal that was fought by our troops in 1942. And we're now advancing and pushing the Japanese back over the Owen Stanley Range. There were two really major battle sites during our withdrawal that we fought on, the first one at Izawarra and the second one at Brigade Hill, that are known to most people who know a little bit about Kokoda. But this, during the advance, this single battle at Eora Creek was the single biggest battle of the entire Kokoda campaign, both in duration and loss of Australian life. We had 79 Australian.
It was very high up, wasn't it?
It was very high, and it's separated from the main Kokoda Trail, where originally, you know, the battles of Izawarra and Brigade Hill were fought along the Kokoda Trail, because this site was actually built during the Japanese advance, and it was built first of all as a Japanese hospital facility to enable during their advance foot passage to go forward to bring resupply forward to their advancing troops as a track that paralleled the Kokoda Trail
right.
that they built themselves, and then secondly as a route for their wounded to walk back to this temporary hospital facility.
This is what makes it so extraordinary, that something substantial like this gets lost. What was it, the terrain, the jungle, inaccurate mapping?
Oh, no, it was actually, in the end, it's inaccurate mapping, but there's probably a very good reason for that and why that occurred with the cartographers at the time. But the fact that it is remote from the Kokoda Trail is probably the most significant factor, in that they built the hospital effectively so that it wouldn't be on the trail. So
right.
it's not on the main commuting route or the main line of access of the Japanese advance. So what they were trying to do was they built it themselves a track during their advance. It's known as Japanese track. And not many people know about Japanese track, and it parallels the Kokoda Trail. And it goes up the back through this tiny village of Alola, and it goes off up the back of their village to the north of the Kokoda Trail, right up over the high ground of Eora Creek. And you can understand, when they're building a hospital facility, or a temporary hospital facility, why they would do that. They're trying to separate it from the main axis of the advance and the point of the Japanese advancing their way across the Owen Stanley Range. So therefore, consequently, because of its location and because they had a commuting route by foot passage, when they were pushed back across the track, it became an ideal place for them to defend.
Mm.
Because when it was revealed to me by the village, when they said, "We have a secret."
Oh, that's a wonderful part in your book.
Yeah.
He turned to you, looked into your eyes, and in a soft voice says, "Brian, this is your killer, your great
killer,
mate.
Yeah.
We have a secret."
Have
what
a
did
secret.
You think?
I've known Killer since Killer was a young teenager. His father was a great, great friend of mine and my head guide for many years. And the thing about these local people that live in the remote villages on the Owen Stanley Range is they don't lie because they don't know how to lie. They don't make things up because, why would they make things up? Because they don't know about it in the first instance, if that makes sense.
Mm.
They, they wouldn't say that there's a Japanese hospital there if they didn't understand there to be the artifacts and the things there that make them think that it was a Japanese hospital. Because during the Japanese advance, the two elders in the village, old Lenny and Levy, the two matriarchs, who are now in their 80s You know, they were young teenagers during, or sorry, young children during the war. They were evacuated by, the whole village was evacuated when the war came. And they went hours away into caves right up the back of the villages, and then they didn't come back until after the war. So the only thing that they get to that can justify their stories and the existence is actual artefacts and what is there on the ground and what they've seen during the war.
I suppose you'd think about the villagers who'd seen all the trekkers going in their thousands over recent years and had sat on this knowledge for 70 years. Why did they decide to tell you? Was it to get the story out?
Well, I think originally, as I've said in the book, that on one of my very first, well, I think it was my second trek of Kokoda, you know, we wearily dragged ourselves into the small village of Valala on the second night of that trip, and I had a group of 18 and I was leading it, and I remember in the group, why it stands out, big Chris Buddha-Handy, the rugby commentator, was with us in that team. And it was raining with what we call fat rain at the time in New Guinea. Fat rain is these big drops that come down. They nearly hurt when they hit you. And the small, very small campsite in those days was overtaken by another trekking group. And that's okay. We understood that. So I was kind of just standing there looking for a solution. And this old porter in the group, very fit with, you know, calves like footballs and no shoes on, came up and he said, "Come, come." And he led me down to his family's huts, which are still his family's huts today. And he'd cleared them out, cleared old Lenny and Levy, where his mother and his grandmother, actually. And they were cleared out of there. And our trekkers stayed in there the night. So from that day on, Eddie then became my head guide. And I remember asking Eddie once, "What's your last name, Eddie?" And he said, "Eddie." I said, "No, that's your first name." He goes, "No, last name Eddie too." So I said, "So your name's Eddie Eddie?" And he said, "That's right." He didn't know when he was born, Eddie. And he then was my head guide for 10 years until, unfortunately, he passed away. But during that 10-year period, I looked after their sick children and I built their church. Which
so you built up a real relationship with them.
Yeah, and their clotheslines and the kids' clothes on the clotheslines are from my children or our children. And
let me just tell listeners who you are again. It's Brian Freeman, who's written The Lost Battlefield of Kokoda, and it's just coming up to 20 to 9. So you had this dilemma. You realise that they're onto something. Then you have to confront the bureaucratic brick walls in terms of what you do with this knowledge.
Yeah, and I had never really necessarily been exposed to that. And a great friend of mine was David Moffat, the ex-2IC of Telstra, and David him and I were planning a great expedition for his 50th birthday. So he assisted me with that bureaucratic process, but it's very difficult. You need to justify existence, and you need to do archaeological surveys and get what, you know, others would call third party endorsement before people start believing you. So,
what did you see? We've only got a couple of minutes left. What did you see when you finally got there?
Well, that was a difficult process in itself. Was actually getting there for the first time. It's 500 vertical meters, which is 500 meters in the sky above the Kokoda Trail. It's still a great distance of, you know, jungle with no track leaning into it. We had to cut our way in there. And I found what was called last water, which made great relevance to what I've been reading in the war journals and in the unit diaries from the war. But when I walked in there that first time, it's this eerie silence of a battlefield, and you know to be coming into a battlefield, and there's weapon pits and there's weapons and there's actually human remains and helmets and everything left where it was drop fired, left or shot on the last day of the battle, 29th of October 1942.
Must have been incredible.
It is unbelievable. And that's when you realise that, you know, that how special it was, because those sorts of things just don't exist in other areas because they would have been removed or tampered with over the years.
What do you want to do with the site? I mean, tell us your vision for it.
We need to move on now to phase three of the archaeological surveys, which is recording the oral history from the elders that still survive the area from the war, who do know the history better than anyone. We need to now start what's called, we've finished our non-invasive site survey, the recording, our archaeological teams with 393 weapon pits on that high location alone.
My goodness.
That's an enormous site. It's an enormous site. Over 200 artefacts already. These are artefacts just laying on top of the ground, radio systems, medical devices, anaesthetic inhalers, scalpels, you know, which demonstrates that the site has not been tampered with previously. We need to move on to phase three, which is the oral history, and then secondly, we need to start to recover 12 pits that we've identified. And that's not our job, that's our archaeological teams, which to date have all been privately funded by ourselves, which is an enormous cost and burden to us. So we, you know, now's the time that we need support.
Well, look, good luck to you.
Thank you.
Brian Freeman, whose Lost Battlefield of Kokoda is published by Macmillan. And it's coming up to 18 to 9.